Hey everybody, this is Eric Mueller, the host of The Eric Mueller Show. You're tuned into the podcast that explores what makes any successful person's inner clock tick by unlocking the most impactful tools within their success portfolio. I'm joined today by Kenny Rose, the founder of FranShares, the first platform enabling retail investors to invest in franchises. Let's head on over to the interview. Kenny, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Eric. Great to be here.
Thank you for your time, man. And Kenny, before we dive deep into this entrepreneurial story of yours and really your expertise on franchise investing and entrepreneurship itself, we want to know what makes up your success portfolio. So if you're new to this show listening, a quick background on this, a way to view it is, think about an investment portfolio. So that compilation of your investments that lays foundational financial goals for you, basically. Well, here on the Eric Mueller Show, I want to discover how successful people like Kenny invest in themselves and build that foundation for their success as a whole. So Kenny, start us off. What are some skills or traits, habits or mindsets that make up your success portfolio?
You know, I'd probably start with mindset because I got two big things that I find have helped me a ton along the way. One is my dad and I coined it the left lane theorem, which is basically just everyone's going right. Try taking a look at what's on the left side of things. You know, it's something where like it's easier said than done, but people always love going in the same direction, following others. And I've always been more of like, go off the beaten path, do something totally different, and then the main road will catch up to you later. The other would be really surrounding yourself with a great team. You know, I actually have my co-working building, they put a quote of mine on the wall. It says, accept that you don't know most things and surround yourself with people that do. And, you know, and the idea is that you learn from them. And so like, I take that all the way from advisors I have all the way down to the team itself. And so like, I have my own advisory board that is really every aspect of business that I could ever need help with. And so if I have a question, I've got someone who's an expert in their field, that's a phone call away. And then, you know, it comes to the team, I tend to hear the adage, hire fast, fire fast, which I really hate. I'm a hire very slow. So you don't have to fire them, ideally. You know, I mean, sometimes it'll take months to find the right hire, but we know it's the exact right one and we've been right every time. And so, you know, it's one of those things where if it's not a hell yeah, it's a no. And so I think really sticking to your guns there on like where you're going and who you're bringing along with you.
Yeah, fantastic, man. I think mindset certainly is a really important aspect, really, of anybody's success portfolio. I can think of numerous examples of people that have shared with me what has been successful for them. And it really kind of also brings to the point of what is success. So, I mean, everyone can kind of think subjectively what they define success to be. There are some objective ways to measure it, whether you're in school, you know, with grades and certain things like that. But Kenny, I'll ask you, what is your definition of success right now and how maybe has that changed over time for you?
It's interesting you say that because I was asked that recently and I feel people tend to expect like a dollar amount or something like that. And, you know, I like to say I'm not a very greedy founder. You know, I want to build something with everyone and all boats rise with the tide. And, you know, where I define success is really an image I have is that, yeah, I want you to be able to walk into like a Jimmy John's one day and see this QR code sitting next to it. And you can scan it and invest that location you're actually standing in. And to me, that's success when I've hit there, because that's when you've like truly democratized a new asset class for everyone. And so like the other things that you could define as success, whether that's like employees, growth of the company, amount invested in the company, but like that is something that's actual impact on the community and the country. And so, I mean, that's how I personally define it at the moment. In the past, it was definitely totally different because this company I started only a few years ago. And even in the past, it could have been, hey, here's a dollar amount I want to get to or amount of vacation time I want. And you know, I find that these are byproducts of, you know, having that vision of what you want to get to in the future. And so for me, it's, you know, having a goal is having that real vision. And then all those other things will catch up with you along the way.
Yeah. And a real quick segue from that, just building off of that point right there, coming up with a vision, is that something that you found was easy to do, hard to do? Did it come to you right away? I'm trying to think in my head of things that you know, I've heard other people talk about in terms of their visions, and some people know it immediately, whereas others take a little more time to figure out what they actually want to do or what their dream is.
Yeah, it definitely took me a long time. And that was kind of by design too, because I originally was in the world of finance, and we'll probably talk about my story later, but I wanted to get out of that. And yeah, I got introduced to the franchise world, and I knew nothing about franchise other than like everyone they know there's fast food places in there. And so I saw it as like, wow, this is almost like a $1 trillion industry that's like kind of behind the times in a lot of ways. And so I thought, let's dig very, very deep into this industry, become an expert, become a thought leader, and then the true need will like show itself eventually. And that's what it did. And so I was in the franchise space for about a decade before starting Franchairs. And so, you know, the idea took me, I mean, probably 5 or 6 years in the industry to come up with. And then I spent another 4 or 5 years like building another business of mine first and becoming a thought leader in the franchise world so that when I eventually was ready to launch this idea, that I'd have all the foundation needed for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you shared, you know, we'll get into your story a little bit. So, I mean, you went to San Diego State University to go, you know, into finance, get a financial degree, and then you worked as a financial advisor for a while before starting, you mentioned a company you started, that's Semfia, right? That was your first business?
Yeah, even before then, I was working for a company that was in the franchise brokerage space. So I cut my teeth
gotcha.
In the franchise brokerage world and then eventually started my own.
Okay. Yeah. So then that brings us to now, you know, the company we're talking about now, Franchairs. Walk us through that story that got you to the point of Franchairs. Like, how did you come up with the idea? Why did you want to start it? And maybe, you know, briefly, you can share a little bit about your background that led you to know you wanted to go into entrepreneurship in general, too.
Yeah, for sure. So, the story really helps like understand like the need and how we got here. Because I'd started off, we were talking about financial services. I was an advisor at Merrill Lynch up in San Francisco. And so being in San Francisco 10, 15 years ago, you started seeing robo-advisors coming. And also, a lot of people know it can be like a what they call finance bro culture. And just a lot of things I didn't really care for. And, you know, I saw that it just wasn't a good long-term career for me. And talked to a family friend. He was the CEO of a company that coaches CEOs. So I'm like, oh yeah, great person to talk to. And he throws me a curveball. What do you know about franchising? And I say what I've heard 1,000 times since: McDonald's, Subway, Taco Bell. Come to find out, his company's a franchise. So not only are there franchises for coaching CEOs, they have franchises for everything you can imagine. And a lot of times you just don't know their franchise because it's not the big golden arches. And so I was like, wow, it's a huge part of the economy that no one's looking at. And so I got into what's called the franchise brokerage world. So it's kind of like being like a realtor or an investment advisor for, you know, someone who wants to buy a franchise. They generally don't know that much about it. And so we educate them on franchising, recommend them specific fits based on their budget, their skill set and goals, and then coach them through that research process until research and purchase process. And so I did that again for the world's largest brokerage for a number of years, then started my own brokerage. And throughout this time, I kept realizing that, you know, a lot of people would ask either, hey, you know, can I just give you 50 grand and you invest it into someone else's franchise? And frankly, if they've already been approved to become a franchisee, like they typically don't need the money. They need it if they're not a good franchisee, which I wouldn't recommend people to put money into. And so the idea was, okay, a lot of people don't want to work in the franchises. They want to invest in them. And on the other side, a lot of people don't have 6 or 7 figures of cash laying around. And so then it's like, hey, they like the idea of investing, but they don't have enough. And so it was, why can't you invest in franchises like you can stocks? And especially we've seen like this fractional investing world really rise over the last 5 years or so with things like Fundrise, Masterworks. And so you can fractionally invest into real estate and into artwork. And it just hadn't existed for franchising. And so, that's when we I really got the kick in the head when the pandemic started off and read an article. People were gambling in the stock market because sports weren't on. And I'm like, oh gosh, investing doesn't make sense. I'm late to start this, but better late than never. And so I shut down my brokerage and got Franchairs going.
Man, yeah. Isn't that crazy that the pandemic like led to something positive for you? Like I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of things that you could think about the pandemic in a negative light, but I think it led to a lot of opportunities for many people, including yourself. Mm-hmm. And that really kind of leads me into, you know, just talking about Franchairs itself with, you know, $18+ million in subscriptions. You can see your wait list, you know, ticker. If you're watching on YouTube, he's got 42,445 waitlistees for the company. It really brings me to like marketing a business. Once you know you have an idea that is, you know, feasible, it has a market fit, there is a demand for it. Yep. How do you get that idea out there? How do you let people know and really shout from the mountaintops that you have something that is of value?
Yeah, very different ways you can do it, whether it's like for the company or for yourself. Because I actually learned how to do it doing personal branding for myself. When I started my first brokerage, I decided like, hey, I really want to become a thought leader in the space. And so I was thinking like, where do people get information from? And I could put information out for cheap. And so are you familiar with Quora, the question and answer website?
Absolutely. I love Quora.
Yeah, Quora is the best. And all of a sudden I was like checking out things on Quora. I'm like, why don't I write on here? And so I started writing out answers on Quora about franchising. And then one of my answers was about how much Chick-fil-A costs. And they ended up sending that out to 40 million people and ended up getting like picked up for a couple articles and stuff. And so, you know, that was one free way to do it. And I realized like, hey, you got to work with what's free a lot of times. And then I'd take a PR angle. And so I would subscribe to Help a Reporter Out or Harrow. And they give you like three times a day, hey, here's what writers are looking for sources on. And so I would check that three times a day, every day for, I think I did it for 5 years. And let me tell you, people don't write about franchising a lot. But when they do, I wanted to make sure I was the guy they were talking to. And so, you know, like Forbes isn't going to pick you up right away for it because who the hell are you in their eyes? And so I started off like, okay, let's look for like a random top five. Well, I would submit for everything, but I'd get picked up first for like random listicle for top five franchises or something in like some nothing blog. But then I'd leverage that. Next person I reached out to like, oh, as featured in this, and then like link to it. And so I just keep leveraging that and moving up. And then eventually I made it into Forbes. I was on ABC. Business Insider did a whole article on my work in the industry. And so I ended up reaching over 300 million people without a penny in ad spend. And so like, there's a lot of free ways you can do it if you're willing to work for it. And so then I tried to bring all those to when we were starting Franchares of like, how can we leverage cheaper, great avenues? And I also have just the most amazing marketing team. Again, very important to hire slow and build with the right people, because my growth team is just absolutely top notch and I wouldn't have it any other way. And so we tried to look at things very uniquely compared to like what's traditional marketing. And one of our best ones was, again, we went to where do people get educated? And especially where do they get educated in finance? And so we ended up finding that like, oh, a lot of people are getting newsletters every day from different things, whether it's an investment newsletter or alternative investing or franchising, tech, whatever. And so we're like, yeah, let's go to where they learn. We're very education focused. And some of those bigger ones, they can cost you ungodly amounts to get going. But so a lot of what we've done is like, the same thing happens in the influencer world. Like if you go on a TikTok and you try and pay some like really famous TikToker, they want absurd amount of money to promote your product or service. But if you go to a really small one that's got like a couple hundred or a couple thousand people, well, they're both cheaper and those people are actually way more engaged. And so we took the same approach to newsletters. And so it's kind of like instead of micro influencers, we did micro newsletters. And so we were looking for what are newsletters that are cheaper to do that are very targeted towards like what we're about and also have a very active, engaged readership. And so, things like podcasts, you know, it's a great way to get the word out for you and just talk about what you do as long as you're passionate about it. And we tried to look at a lot of these different avenues and then, you know, good old paid social. We started working with some influencers. So a little bit of everything we've tried putting in there and it's just been a great mix of it all.
Yeah, that's a really interesting, you know, way to think of the micro influencing or micro newsletter. Like really that kind of got my mind thinking of opportunities even, you know, in my own, you know, kind of journey, because that really is a true statement of those kind of smaller as they're building, as they're in their growth stages of their own. It's like having like 1,000 loyal followers, more or less, like that yeah. Old story where it's like if you have that, that's better than having 1 million people that, you know, not many of them are engaged. So I think that I'm glad to hear that worked out for you. Maybe that gets some of you thinking, listening out there of ways that you can, you know, possibly market your own expertise or things that you're working on. And it really also too, like it brings to me the point of passion versus expertise, like kind of that intersection when you're trying to start something. Did you find that was really essential that you had like that knowledge of that expertise about the industry as you were starting the company? Is that?
I need a ton of both to get going. I mean, like, you know, expertise is something you learn over time. Passion's when you really believe in what you're doing. And I, when I was going out to fundraise for the company the first time around, we were raising like a pre-seed venture-backed round. And honestly, I didn't have employees. It was just me. I didn't have a product. I'd built a landing page and I'm not a coder. So, you know, really what I had to rely on was my passion and my expertise. And so, you know, I went out and fundraised for it. Not only were people eventually like up for writing checks, but a lot of them said like, no one else could do this but you. And so like, that's what we really want to hear. And so you got to have a good amount of both, because also like when you're trying to grow, it's like, you're the first salesperson as a founder of the company. And so you got to have that passion there, or else people don't believe you. It doesn't sound like you believe it. And if you can't answer all the big questions, like, people won't be customers for you. So you need both the expertise and the passion.
And Kenny, specifically regarding this opportunity with franchise investing, you know, fractional investing in franchises compared with real estate, I've had a few guests on the podcast talk about real estate, a few in a more traditional sense and a few in kind of more of a alternative sense where you can invest. You know, I had one company, Roots, that actually has apartment, you know, investing and kind of works with residents to do that. So there's a lot of different alternative ways that people, I think, are approaching real estate. What is the difference with what you provide through franchares, and how does that maybe provide even more benefit, or has, you know, a different amount of scalability and growth potential?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for one, I always say that like we're complements to each other, not one or the other. You know, a lot of financial advisors will tell you should have about 20% of your portfolio in alternatives. And so I'd be one greedy person if I said, oh yeah, throw all 20 franchares away. It's like, hey, get real estate, get franchising, get maybe art and gold, like diversify it. As far as like how they're similar and different, you know, real estate's, when you ask people about alternative investing, the main one they're all going to know is real estate. And so you'll get the left lane theorem I was talking about before. You know, everyone's going right. You should probably start looking to the left a little bit and something else that's off the beaten path. You know, because you've got all these institutional capital groups that are investing all the way down to single family homes now. And so everyone knows, hey, I should be investing in more alternatives, but they're all throwing it into that same real estate bucket. And so you're going to see returns continue to go down and down. And eventually, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, we'll buy it and rent it out. Eventually, you will price yourself out of rentals. And I think we're starting to see it already. And people are realizing, oh, homes are too expensive. And then when it comes to, I'd say, other similarities is that, you know, they're income producing, and it's very tough to find income producing investments, let alone alternative ones. It's basically real estate, which we talked about. There's bonds, which aren't really paying a whole lot. And so we see this is one that people can understand, that honestly, it's tangible. Like right now we do nationwide portfolios, but, you know, I'm in Chicago, and soon enough you'll see a Chicago portfolio. So like where you actually go to eat, get your hair cut, go work out, those are all things that you own a piece of, which is something that you don't really find in real estate. You know, a lot of times you're investing in real estate, it's across the country. Or if you are seeing it, it's because something broke around there and you don't want to be fixing it. But you don't really like drive around and see the house and be like, oh, I'm proud of that. But driving past a local business and creating jobs in your community, like, it's an investment that both makes sense, makes money, and makes you proud at the same time. So, and I see it as like right now, franchising's about 3.5% of the US GDP. And that's when most people don't know that much about it. So, you know, as we like continue to open up of access to it for people, more will understand it. And I see the entire industry growing immensely. So ton of upside potential here for us in the long run.
Yeah. And actually, if you go to franchares.com, which I'll tag this in the show notes, but there's in the why franchising section under the about section, or maybe the discover section, there's basically a chart that shows kind of what he was just talking about with, you know, the benefits with passive franchise investing with the cash flow compared to like real estate where you have cash flow, crypto, no cash flow. So I really like that breakdown, Kenny. I thought that was kind of a cool way to view it on your website there.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. And also another point was, and this is, we kind of talked about this pre-interview, but a study that you participated in and funded with YouGov, talking about alternative asset classes and younger investors and really finding out that they're actually even more interested in real estate and farmland and venture capital compared to crypto, which is kind of probably the opposite maybe of what some of you listening are thinking when you're on social media and, you know, in the pandemic, everyone was a retail investor and we had the GameStop and that different, you know, crazy stuff with AMC and, you know, crypto had a boom and then it fell. And so I think that it probably is a good thing that younger investors, you know, in the millennial and Gen Z generations, that they're more interested in the alternative asset, more business type classes Yep. Do you think, Kenny, I mean, were you surprised with those results, or did you kind of expect to have that, you know, case with that study?
I absolutely expected it. I mean, part of it is that people are bored by the stock market, and there's a ton of market manipulation that's out there. You know, like a tweet can move a stock, like that's terrifying. And so I think people are afraid of like how all the market noise can affect their livelihood, but also like, you know, they're looking for things that earn more over time, and the stock market's really steady Eddie, and alternative assets tend to produce more. It's just that they typically had much higher minimums to get involved with and like had less liquidity. And so like, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, that's honestly part of why we saw Bitcoin and NFTs taking off. Now, if you asked me about those 3 years ago, I'd tell you the same thing I'd tell you now is like, what's it based on? Like, I understand the technology, but at the end of the day, if no one wants to buy it, it's not actually worth anything versus a franchise. It's a business that's producing capital. Like, that is something that people want to buy and like has something it's based on. And so I see this as like people got interested in alternatives because like during the pandemic, especially, but then they realized that like a lot of cryptocurrencies and NFTs aren't sustainable. So they're like, hey, I like alternatives. These ones aren't them. Which ones should we be looking for now? And so, it was definitely like great to see, but also not too unexpected. But I think we saw like 87% of millennials and 89% of Gen Z plan to increase their allocation of alternative investments this year. So it was great to hear, and honestly, not surprised. I think that's going to continue to go up.
Well, and another piece that I thought was kind of interesting with that study was that the younger investing group actually had like a shorter horizon on their investment, like a shorter investment horizon than the older groups, despite the fact that we have longer to invest. I thought that was, you know, kind of an interesting point. And the older investors as well, they were more likely to invest more money in alternatives, even though the youngers had, you know, more interest in it as a whole. So there's, you know, I can tag this link into the show notes too, of that study, and everyone listening can read it too. Cause I think there's a lot of pieces in there that were pretty eye-opening for me. They were somewhat of the opposite of what I expected, to be honest with you, Kenny.
Yeah, really. Honestly, a lot of it is what I expected, because you're right. In theory, younger people should have longer time horizons. But in reality, people are very impatient and, you know, they want things now. And so honestly, it's a big part of why I'm very education-focused beginning, during, and after, is that like, honestly, if you're expecting insane returns insanely quickly, like if someone tells you you're going to get it, it's probably a scam. And so, you know, that's one thing, one of the reasons we did this survey is to like understand how people are thinking and also get like millennials and Gen Z to pump the brakes a little bit and be like, hey, you should be investing long term. Like no one's going to produce for you overnight. But then for the older investors, I think it makes sense that they were willing to do more into alternatives. I mean, again, basic theory would say, oh, I've got longer on my time horizon, so I should be doing less. I should do less risky things. But also, they understand investing more, and they've had more time to experience alternative investments. And so those who have done well in their portfolios, they often got a lot of it done through alternative investing. And so they say, oh, I want to do more into there.
Yeah, and that's, I think, really, you know, probably kind of comes down to like the generational thing with millennials and, you know, and Gen Z. Like I'm in the millennial group, but you know, the impatience of wanting that instant gratification is kind of, I feel like, just ingrained in us for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, I try to, you know, kind of rein that back as much as possible, but it is tough to be patient when you do see not overnight success, but you do see things that look like it in the moment, but you don't really see all the back end work that went into that possibly. I mean, obviously you have people that could go viral with just one thing that happened and it was kind of a one-hit wonder. But I feel like most of the time with people that are successful, they have a lot of back-end work. It's possibly years and decades of work, and you just see the success after the fact. It's kind of like looking at the tip of an iceberg, more or less. Have you found with people you've worked with and other entrepreneurs that you've networked with, have you found anybody that really is a true overnight success, or is that somewhat of a myth?
I think that's a total myth. I mean, if you are actually, I will say there have been occasional times, and a lot of it was during the pandemic, is that if you're in like just a once in a lifetime crazy thing going on, and you were the very first to like jump at something, like I'll say, you know, a lot of people who made so much money doing like cleaning supplies and stuff early pandemic, and it was like overnight success. But it's also not a sustainable one. I think that's like what's an overnight success that is going to be a sustainable one is ones that they weren't overnight. They spent years in preparation for it. You know, like I had the idea for this 7 years ago or so, and I was just in waiting to get it going, like making sure I had this whole foundation ready to roll. So, if I had tried to launch it earlier, I could have been overnight success, but it would have been a shorter flame probably.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It always reminds me of I grew up, and still do run long distance and, you know, train for half marathons and hope to run a full marathon soon. But it's that thing you see on race day, you see the performance. So if you watch the Olympics, you see them perform and you're like, okay, that's crazy impressive. But you don't see all those days, all those hours they put in training. And you're never going to see like an overnight success in athletics. It's just, that's not physically possible. So yeah, I think it's good to keep that in really perspective.
I love that. That's a great comparison.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and again, to your point, you know, kind of the personal stories of, that's what I relate it to with, you know, my running background. So I'm sure listeners out there can think of what in your life, you know, has that same story for you that, you know, hey, this takes some time, you know, music or really insert anything that is cool, that is great. It's going to take time. So I think Franchairs is a great example of an entrepreneurial opportunity that is really, you know, in a niche that obviously you identified a need, something that, you know, everybody was going one way, you wanted to go a different way. Do you think that over time we might see more companies like this? I mean, do you think you could become the market leader and just have a stranglehold on it where you'd want to acquire companies that would start doing the same thing? Or are there companies that also do this?
So no one else does it. And frankly, I got that question a lot when I was fundraising for the company. I was like, why haven't I seen this? And I'm like, honestly, because I was like 22 or 23 and picked a crazy ass industry to dive super deep into. And like, you know, you could work for a single franchise brand and you'll get like a bunch about, like, if you work for a McDonald's corporate, you'll know a lot about McDonald's and the burger industry, but it doesn't mean you know all about franchising. Like, you really have to come from this brokerage space that I did in order to like truly understand it. And most people in that industry were 30 years plus older than me. And so, you know, like, people will try for sure to copy us, but like, honestly, authenticity can't be faked. And industry experience can't be either. And so, you know, I think people will start to see right through that where it's like, they don't know what they're talking about. And it'll be easy to poke holes in whatever they're trying to do. But also, yeah, we've got a lot of things cooking too that it's just going to be hard for anyone to catch up to us.
That's good to hear. I'm happy in that regard, because I think that's, you know, possibly something that people, when they start a company, might be a little nervous about the competition, even if you're first to the space. The example that I always like to think about it is Lyft and Uber. And so obviously now, you know, Uber is a bigger company, you know, has more, you know, capital and whatnot. But Lyft was actually there first. So I think that's kind of a unique story to think about, that you don't have to be the first to be the best, but you also, in your case, you can be the first and also be the best. You know, if you have the right model, have the right team, sounds like you're growing it, you know, in the right way, hire slow. You know, so yeah, really, I think what you're doing is great. I wish you the best of luck with that. Another question I have as we're kind of winding down, you've worked with over 600 franchise brands. Do you have one in particular that's your favorite? Is there one brand? You mentioned you wrote about Chick-fil-A on Quora, but...
Yeah. Honestly, it's so tough to say that because there's just so many out there. But one of my favorites, I'll say, is one that we actually invested in. It's in the waste management space. This franchise is so bizarre as it is cool. And you think about anything in the commercial space, whether that's construction, manufacturing, distribution, they usually have those like giant open top dumpsters out back. And it costs a bunch of money to haul that off to the dump every time. But this franchise is called Smash My Trash. They drive this giant rig up with a 2-ton steel drum that mashes and grinds everything down, so you can keep filling the dumpster back up. Less trips to the dump saves you money on your waste management costs. So it's just like the ultimate no-brainer for business owners. Like, the hardest part's being like, what is this? I've never heard of it, you know? And just getting them to like do something new. But I mean, they were the fastest growing franchise I've ever seen, and with just such a great need for it. And so we're opening in multiple states with that, and it's just such a great business.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think, you know, maybe not a glamorous business, some people would say, but it's like that has a proven need, and they found a market fit and people are willing to pay for it. So it's something that works. Yeah, I think that's a really cool example. Kenny, as we close the episode down here, I really appreciate your time, really appreciate you being on the show. Want to ask one thing about entrepreneurship. And that is there a myth about entrepreneurship itself that you want to debunk? We debunked something earlier, you know, a different myth, but just broadly speaking, in your experience, you've had, you know, traditional finance experience, and then you got into the entrepreneurship route. What is a myth about it that you want to debunk and have people know that that's not true?
It's a great question. One of them, I think, would be that a great idea is all you need, because that's the farthest from it. Like, they're great ideas, just the start. You know, if you don't know how to do all these other parts about owning a business, it's not going to be successful. And on a similar note, not every good idea is a great idea. A lot of people think like, oh, this is such a good idea. And it's like, go ask 10 people about it who are going to tell you to your face if that's actually a good idea or not. Because if they won't, you know, and maybe it could be something like, you know, I might have heard that about this and I'd say, screw off, this is going to work, I'm going to keep going. But, you know, it is good to like have some advisors who can like be candid with you and like poke holes in it. And so, you know, it's going to be a rough road no matter how great of an idea it is. So get some good people by it.
And a silly example I'll draw from that, just it's fall, it's football season. I kind of think of, you know, fantasy football, and I play that. I don't know if you do as well, Kenny, but you tend to fall in love with your own team and your own players. And you probably, you know, not every good idea is a great idea. It's like, hey, I had a great draft, but now it's starting to turn sour. Now they're not performing. It's like, at some point you might want to cut bait on some of those players. Like, you don't want to fall too much in love with it. Some people do it with stocks as well. So to have people do it with entrepreneurship, I'm sure that happens too. If you fall in love with your idea, at some point, maybe you should pivot or try to, you know, find a way to tweak it. Yeah. And Kenny, as we close now, finally, I know I've said it three times now, what is the best way that someone can contact and reach out to you if they want to learn more about your company or talk with you?
Yeah, so you can check out the website, franshares.com, like shares of franchises, or if you're watching on YouTube, exactly like it's on my shirt. And then also, I love connecting with people on LinkedIn. So mention that you heard us on the show and go ahead and add me. The name's Kenny Rose, Rose spelled like the flower, and I always love chatting with people.
Kenny Rose, founder of Franshares, thank you so much for being a guest in the Eric Mueller Show. We'll tag all that in the show notes, and we look forward to following your journey, and we'll keep up with you soon, sir.
Thanks so much, Eric. Appreciate being here.
Thank you.